Radio. This is Sue Carpenter, 40 Watts from Nowhere, formerly of KBLT, More Power Freak Radio.
Hello, I am John Anderson, guide to Pirate Radio. You are listening to Freak Radio Santa Cruz, the best damn station in the country, and it's all for you.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrobs, Piers, Broadsides, with special guests Mike Rhodes, Clive Bustrade, and who knows, maybe you if you call in. Stay tuned, and thanks for listening to 101.1 FM and freakradio.org.
He said, do not speak your mother tongue. He said, do, he said, do. Girl, do you know from which I come? He said, don't let me talk of my disgrace. Yeah, the scratching white of my habitual shame. Well, acquainted with original sin, bent on the head of my pen for 12 years.
And welcome to Bathrooms, Piers, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse, and who knows who you are? That was Song for Thomas, Laid Down by Laura Harding on In Harmony with the Homeless. My backup homeless recordings until Skidmark Bob gives me the cool new disc number 3 of Homeless Stuff, which apparently he's having a little trouble finding. Of course, he's not feeling too well, and still keeping an eye on the station. Thank you, Skidmark. And for other folks, again, I'm expecting a few out-of-town calls from at least 2 individuals who should be rather interesting, both of whom have been on the radio before, and we'll talk about them when and if they show up. What's happening? Well, there was a city council meeting on Tuesday that, mercifully, I didn't go to, and it had both an afternoon and an evening session where the La Bahia Project got crammed down the city's throat 5-1. I believe Madrigal was the only opposing vote, mainly because I think he felt buffeted by his union constituency, which is good, but it really shows Madrigal's responses are not terribly independent, not terribly principled, and not terribly... he did the right vote. The other 5 were, of course, even worse, and kind of succumbed to the Swenson develop or else philosophy. I don't speak out of a lot of knowledge of this project. I'm talking kind of out of a just sort of an inclination, a point of view. And I don't know how it has too much to do with civil rights for poor and homeless people, which is my main topic on these broadcasts. So I will leave that one aside until we get some more expert or informed discussion or debate on that. We had 2 shows earlier today, which should be archived within a few days, hopefully, on the Huff website, as this show will be and as many other shows have been. And that's, again, at huffsantacruz.org, www.huffsantacruz, all one word, all small letters, .org. You want to go there, you can click on the name of the show, which is the tongue-twisting Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Mm-hmm. And you can hear old shows and actually see some of them described. Also, starting to operate slightly is the Santa Cruz Copwatch blog, which right now only has my writing on it. But hey, it could have yours too if you see police activity you think needs some mention. For those who are interested, I've written a story, as I said earlier in the day, and one of the earlier broadcasts, on the pendulum pusher, Lather, who won in court. He actually won before court because the sergeant who gave him the citation, Sergeant Bush, essentially made a false arrest. He was a false citation, and it sounds like it was a citation motivated by prejudice and selective enforcement kind of a priority where he just didn't like the way Lather looked. So it's okay for the middle-class kiddies and people to push the sculpture, but not somebody who looks a little grubbier, a little more homeless, a little more low-income. And anyway, I wasn't present, but that was how it was described to me, admittedly, by the perpetrator and also by his wife, again, an interested person, Alice. And finally, it was also, there were some witnesses, apparently, that were also involved in that situation. So I'm going to begin by kind of taking up where I left off until I actually hear from folks who are committed to calling in, but often that doesn't happen, so we'll see if we get our guests calling. Until we do, I'm going to kind of play some of these tapes from the last week or so. Here's some tapes from Felton. I think we're talking last Saturday, Friday or Saturday, maybe even Sunday. Felton, little community up north where there were some low-income folks hanging out talking about police issues. I kind of happened upon them. I played some of this earlier today. I'm going to play more of it now. And again, I invite you to call in. 427-3772 is the call-in number if you want to get in touch. And I'll answer the phone. 427-FRSC. Give me a call if you'd like at any point if you've got some commentary of your own, some breaking news, some angry gripes, you name it. Any comments for free radio from the woman's side of the whole story? I see 3 women here.
Okay, what are we talking about?
How the police are treating folks in the Felton area. How are the police treating people?
How are police treating people?
Yes.
Horribly.
Well, tell me about that. What's your name?
Johnny Hughes.
What's the police?
I was profiled.
When was this?
Profiled December 12th.
Okay, what happened?
Profiled.
I was walking to my car to get a pack of cigarettes. Two cops, policemen.
Deputies.
Green and white. Walked up to talk to me and said, "Can I talk to you?" And I said, "Yes."
Oh my God.
Well, that led to, do you have any controlled substance?
Oh my God. That is
If we will not put a probation hold on you, we will not tow your car, we will not do anything to you.
Were you on parole or probation?
I was on probation for 2 more months.
So they had the right to search you?
Okay. No, I didn't have search clause.
No search clause?
No.
Okay, so therefore you could have said to them,
I don't have to talk to you.
Yeah, and what you chose not to at that point.
I didn't know that I had the right not to talk to
you.
Them.
So what happened as a result of all this?
I'm in Prop 36.
You mean they found something, they arrested you?
Yes. Well, they arrested me for 5 hours. I put up $500. Somebody put up a $5,000 bond, a signature.
What was the charge?
Possession.
Of?
Meth.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I told them where it was. I told them it was in my purse, in my car, da-da-da, and they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And my life has been hell since.
Now,
do you
feel that the using meth has had any bad effects on you? Were you able to handle it? Was the police
a complication? You know what? I had more fun. I've spent $20,000 since May of 2008, and I have had nothing but a wonderful time. I stole nothing. I did nothing to nobody. I hurt nobody. I did nothing. I had a great time. Okay.
You have no regrets?
I have no regrets.
How's your health?
Wonderfully.
So, and would
I'm
you,
fine. I'm 60 years old, and I have nothing wrong.
And how frequently were you using meth?
Every day.
And that had no particular impact on you, so you wouldn't, should we say, advise others not to use it?
No. Well, some people can't do meth. Some people get crazy, and they go do stupid stuff, and, you know, they steal, and they get mad, and, okay, some people can't. But other people can,
mm-hmm.
You know, and my boyfriend and I, which we are married now, just had a great time, us. Just us.
Now, is this new, or did this begin, like, in 2008, or are you an old-time meth user?
Nope. The first time I used meth was, I was 52 years old, which was, 8 years ago? Just 2 years before my husband was murdered. The first time I did meth, came to Boulder Creek from Sacramento, did meth. Liked it a lot, and then he was murdered, and when he was murdered, then I got kind of crazy.
And what happened then?
Well, it wasn't meth, it was alcohol. I got real crazy with alcohol.
Now, are you using much alcohol now? Because
today?
Not today, because you don't seem to be, but I mean generally in the last couple.
Yes, I am on alcohol today.
And how does that, was meth a substitute for alcohol? Was it an aggravation?
No, meth was a fun thing.
Now, how's alcohol? Is that a fun thing?
Live around you guys.
No.
What is it? It's more of a, you take it as a medication? How do you?
I can't, yeah. Well, alcohol just kind of makes me all right.
How is it when you're not all right? You mean you don't feel all right or you don't act all right?
Oh, I don't, I'm not even a person.
You have to walk.
In what sense? You mean you don't feel like a person?
No, I don't feel like a person. I am outgoing. You've seen this now. Everybody loves me. We talk. We're all friends.
You've been drinking?
Today?
Yeah.
Yes.
Much?
No. No.
So how much have you had to drink?
One glass. One drink.
Of?
Vodka.
Okay.
Uh-huh. But
like we're losing half our crowd here. Hope we're not driving.
That's all right. They'll be back.
And we're going to kind of break into this Felton discussion of the joys of meth because we have, a non-meth user on the line. We want to call a sign-in caller. You there?
Hi, Robert. I could hear you, but you sound very distant.
Oh, dear. Well, let me see what I can do about that. How about this? How do I sound now?
That's much better.
Okay. I think one of the dials got turned way down. So you are, in fact, Mike Rhodes.
Right, and as you said, I'm not a meth user.
You're not a meth user. Have you considered using meth for fun, perhaps?
I don't know. It doesn't sound like too much fun to me, but then maybe my definition of fun is different than other people's.
Right. I mean, I know actually you, you've spent a lot of time defending the rights of and documenting the struggles of homeless people in Fresno, and indeed your work can be found at indybay.org/Central Valley for those who are interested. That's indybay.org/Central Valley, all small letters. Although I haven't seen much about the H Street encampment other than the attempt to, I guess, the removal of some toxic oil drum or something, but nothing about the fate of the H Street encampmentees. Maybe we can talk to you a little bit about that. This is, of course, one of the three tent cities, or more than that, squatter villages in Fresno, which I guess covers about, what, two, three? How many hundred people are covered by the three tent cities together?
Oh, if you add them all together, there's probably 400 people.
400 people?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a population of 13,000 up in Fresno, right? Who are homeless?
Well, it's hard to say for sure how many people there are, but my best estimate is that there's over 10. There may be as many as 20,000 people living in various states of homelessness. But in the downtown area, you probably have 2,000 people that are just living on the street, and a number of them live in the three encampments, but not everybody. A lot of
Most of them aren't in tent cities, right?
Say again?
Most of them are not in tent cities.
Right, exactly. Most of them are scattered about the city, and some of them live in the sort of informal encampments that are in downtown Fresno. And then there's another probably, 150 or so that live in the tool sheds that the city has put up to enforce homeless people to live in them.
Poverello House dog houses, as I call them.
They're just like a tool shed like you would have in your backyard and have your lawnmower in it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put your child in there and force them to live there, you'd probably be arrested for child endangerment. But apparently the city is above the law.
Now, wait a minute. Just because the tool sheds are 110 degrees in the summer and, 20 degrees in the winter, there's no reason to consider that they're not appropriate housing.
Yeah, well, it gets to be 110 here in the summer, but what happens is that the tool sheds, there's no shade there at all, so they just radiate the heat. They probably get to be 130, 140 degrees inside, and there's just no escape. There's no electricity, there's no cooling. There's no running water. There's no way to escape. So they're virtual death traps is what they are.
Well, has anybody actually died in these tool sheds that you know of?
Huh, that's a good question, Robert. People die out there all the time. Nobody has told me specifically that they have died because they were in the tool shed. But that would be an interesting development if that were to happen. And I'm not saying it's hasn't happened. I'm just saying I haven't heard of it.
Or have there been any medical emergencies that you know of reported from the tool sheds as a consequence of the living conditions?
Oh, there are ambulances there all the time. People's health is compromised by living in there. I'm sure that their systems are weakened by just the very just living under those kinds of conditions.
Well,
but you started off talking about the
H Street encampment
on H Street, and you wanted to know an update about what was happening there.
I did, but before you tell me that, first of all, how much time have you got to talk on the air tonight?
Well, could we do about 30 minutes?
Sure, we can do that. I just want to I do want to get to H Street. I did begin with it. I want to continue with it, but I'm interested in kind of for people who don't know the. There are, if you add together the Poverello House, what some would call the poverty pimp program, it's a regulated. Are you allowed to be in the Poverello House encampment during the day or not? Or do you have to leave?
The Poverello House is actually a fairly large facility, and they have people in their camp most of the day, but you cannot stay. If you're living in the tool sheds, you can't stay there past 8 in the morning, and you can't come back until 5 in the afternoon. But they do have, like, a cafeteria and a room where people will go and watch TV. They have, basketball, and they have a dog kennel there. They got all kinds of things that people use all day long, but you can't be in the tool shed. You can't be sleeping in past 8 o'clock.
And is there any internal homeless run organization there, or is it imposed from above by those who essentially get funded by the city to run this?
Well, yeah, it's basically run by the Poverello House. They have the last say in it, but there's sort of the tool sheds make up into two different camps, and camp number one, the original one, I think of it sort of as the Survivor show on TV for homeless people, where they vote people off the island, because it's run in such a way that the people that live there, if they like somebody, they stay there. If they don't like them, they can vote them out of the homeless encampment.
And how many people live there?
Probably about 60 or 70.
Okay.
And then there's another one that there's more people living in, probably more like 100 people in school sheds, that is a little looser in that you just get on a list, and when your name comes up, you're in. But if you leave for a couple of days, I think it's 2 or 3 days, and you come back, you can't return because they've given your room to somebody else. They don't leave it open for you. But so, in other words, if you went and stayed with your father or mother or son or daughter and came back 2 days later, 3 days later, they would just say, you know, here's your stuff.
Right.
You know, good luck.
Now, we've talked a bit about, you know, there's Poverello House's tool sheds A and B, or 1 and 2. There's Taco Flats, or the H Street encampment, which we're about to talk about, as well as New Jack City and The Hill, the three kind of homeless-run, homeless-developed encampments in the sense that they just probably sounds like they're more libertarian. But for the great majority of homeless people in Fresno, there are no specific encampments. They just sleep outside wherever they can or in vehicles, right?
Yeah, that's right. A lot of them live downtown in tents, in little alleys and vacant lots. You'll see people living all over downtown Fresno. In fact, there's going to be a cleanup in a couple of days on the Mariposa Mall, which is sort of like Pacific Avenue. I think it's Pacific in Santa Cruz, where you have a mall. Well, our mall doesn't have any cars on it, and so at night people put up their tents. Or their sleeping bag and camp out there. And the city is just about to clean that out. And they will take homeless people's property and store it for 90 days, and it can be recovered. But in other places, like at the Hill or the H Street encampment, the city has stopped taking people's property, and they simply clean up around their property and allow people to continue living there. They've even put out a couple of trash bins and portable toilets for people to use at the H Street encampment.
I want to talk about the H Street encampment, but again, one more question about the general situation in Fresno. You defeated a renewed camping ban similar to Santa Cruz's camping ordinance, which it criminalizes sleeping after 11 o'clock at night. I don't know what yours was saying, but I think it was something at least similarly abusive to homeless people who have a need to sleep at night, as was recognized by the Federal Court of Appeals in the Jones settlement in Los Angeles and the Spencer settlement in San Diego and Laguna Beach settlement in Laguna Beach and so forth. But what's the situation for the average person on the street in Fresno? Is there a law that criminalizes sleeping on the street, or the police are just allowed to run around and fuck with the people all they want and seize their property just because they can without benefit of any particular ordinance? It's just they just go do it.
Right. I think that sort of says it, that it's pretty arbitrary, and it probably depends on where the person is camping, whether they'll be harassed or not.
I mean, I'm saying outside the encampments that you've talked about where people are more protected, like the H Street encampment, New Jack City and the Hill, and perhaps the Poverello House. Elsewhere, like these places you say they're about to clean up, which, because that's where most people are, right, is elsewhere.
But it's not like any one concentrated elsewhere.
No, but I'm saying the average...
It's all over, and they're only selectively choosing the places that they want to clean out. For example, if you were living in the old industrial section of downtown Fresno behind a warehouse, they probably wouldn't harass you. But the mall, the Mariposa Mall, where they're going to clean up in a couple of days, is right in front of City Hall. And so it's very visible, and those are the targets that they're most likely to focus on.
Are you getting regular reports from the folks who are at the Mariposa Mall and then other places outside of the main encampment areas? Do you get, you know, is there much either organizing or communication between you and those homeless folks?
Yeah, I run into people that are there pretty regularly because the library, for example, is right down the street, and a lot of the people that live there will head over to the library during the day, and I'll run into them, and we'll talk about what's going on over there. But some of the more distant places, you know, if people are isolated, then there's really no communication other than unless I run into somebody who I've worked with, a homeless person that knows them and they can tell me stories. And,
right.
And I do hear stories,
right.
But it's just on a very...
right, anecdotal, secondhand basis, perhaps. But $2.3 million has been distributed or is in the process of being distributed to homeless people. And I take it, what percentage of the homeless people receiving that money are outside the established encampments and are part of the much broader, you know, essentially less protected homeless population in Santa Cruz? I mean, Santa Cruz, in Fresno.
Santa Cruz
on the mind here.
Yeah, it seems like a number of people who got enough money from the settlement, maybe 75 or 100 of them, and there was a little over 300 people in this settlement. It was a class action suit. So maybe 100 of them actually got apartments for up to a year or so. So the money they got went directly for the payment of an apartment or a house.
Were they originally outside the established encampments, or were they in established encampments?
It just mixed. You had people from all over Fresno that were part of this lawsuit, and you had people that were both inside the encampment.
Has the lawsuit deterred generally police action against the majority of Fresno homeless residents who are outside these encampments, with the exception of the occasional cleanup campaign?
Yeah. That's, you know, the law was, it was very narrow. The victory was very narrow in that what we accomplished was to stop the city from taking and immediately destroying homeless people's property. I still hear reports regularly of abuse, arbitrary citations. They will stop people regularly and run them through parole, probation. So that continues.
But there is no Fresno citywide camping ban right now. Is that correct?
Right. They don't have that tool to harass people with.
They use everything else.
Right. I mean, it's the culture of the Fresno Police Department you're talking about, really. And that hasn't changed because of the lawsuit. They still continue doing what they did before the lawsuit. They don't think that it really affects them. And I've talked to people at City Hall, and they just don't want to go there. The police, and I'm sure you remember this, and you said you wanted to talk about this guy, Glenn Beatty, who...
Glenn, what's his last name again?
Beatty, B-E-A-T-Y, who was beaten by the Fresno police. Somebody caught it on video, and it went national. People saw this all over the country and around the world, and it put a great deal of pressure on the city of Fresno and the police department for a while to come up with some cover for themselves on this. And what they did as a result was form a establish an independent police auditor in Fresno, which, depending on who you listen to, either is a great step forward or it's a public relations coup for the chief of police.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, I think you know which side I'm on, obviously the second side of that one. But and I don't know. I haven't read the powers of the auditor or what she or he is doing, and that's another issue. But and I'm glad you bring us up to date. What happened with Glenn Beatty? Is it or Beatty?
Beatty. Yeah. Well, I think it's,
is he alive? Is he in jail?
I've actually been corresponding with him in jail. He's in the Fresno County Jail.
What's he charged with?
He is charged with assaulting a police officer.
The same police officer supposedly assaulted him on video?
I don't think so, but I'm not absolutely certain. I have a little trouble with sorting the details out. The police came out with all this stuff about him right after this video surfaced, and they were saying he has a long history of violence and he assaulted an officer at one time. So the charges that have him in jail at the moment could have either stemmed from an earlier incident, or it could be the current incident where he was beaten by the police officer. And the officer did break his finger beating him, so they may be holding him on assault charges of that officer because he broke his finger beating him.
What happened to the officer involved? Has he been suspended, disciplined, or is he being investigated? Or is that all hidden behind the great black velvet curtain of the Copley decision of 2006, which makes police investigation to police essentially hidden territory from the general public?
Well, see, that's the great thing about talking to you, Robert. You not only ask the questions, you're able to answer them as well.
Mamma mia.
So you got it pretty much right. We have requested the name of the officer, and that information has been refused. We had the ACLU, actually, attorneys wrote a letter to the Fresno Police Department asking for the name of the officer. So, you know, I mean, how do you know what else this guy has
done?
Wait a minute.
If the officer assaulted the guy and he's charged in response with assaulting back, certainly all the ACLU has to do is volunteer as this guy's lawyer. And, you know, if he, in court, they'll have to give the name of the officer because he has to be able to defend against the charge. So,
yeah, no, he has an attorney.
Well, maybe his attorney must know the name of that officer.
Well, he probably does, but I don't know that he's going to tell us. And that's part of the problem.
That's weird.
Is the attorney has counseled Glenn not to talk to us because they're filing suit for violating his civil rights. And his attorney's telling him that he shouldn't talk to me. And I'm in a dialogue with Glenn about this and trying to encourage him to tell his side of the story, but you have that going on with his attorney telling him not to talk to the media.
You know, the one way around that, which I've suggested to people here, including Donna Dice, who's charged with, you know, she's charged with resisting arrest, and other people who've had this problem, they want to get their account out, but they don't want to make statements that will incriminate themselves because they're facing criminal charges or they don't want to reveal their civil strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Have a fictitious second person who is a witness tell the story but actually what's really happening is the original person is telling the story.
Yeah.
You create
a
second person, you know.
Yeah. I suggested that to Glenn in the last letter I sent him.
Great.
So great minds think alike, Robert.
Whoa.
I was like, no, just, you know, do this fictitiously and tell the story about what happened, but we'll just use a different name and a different city, but, you know, everybody will know what you're talking about. So.
Right. I mean, plus, I think it's really a public menace. If you have an officer who's willing to beat somebody up who's homeless, they're probably likely to be not necessarily, and who knows what happened in this incident. But, you know, it's obviously hazardous for those who are regularly patrolling with the force of law and backup. Well, you know, I don't have to go into all that. The cop needs to be named. People need to know who he or she is. I assume it's a he. We're talking with Mike Rhodes in Fresno. I'm trying to rush through a half hour before you have to go and before I have to go. Here in Santa Cruz, we have some activists at UCSC who are considering as a project setting up a tent city in Santa Cruz, and they're wondering how to do it. And so I may be referring them to you as the tent city maestro of Fresno. And
well,
perhaps,
what kind of advice would they want?
Well, they want to know, you know, I guess I think that some of them are rather idealistic. They think that, you know, you want to have some programs to funnel out of homelessness. You want to get community support. You want to get, you know, the city council and the police on your side. You want to present a proposal that encourages everyone and gets more people involved. I mean, a lot of these ideas are good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I've pointed out to these folks that what, you know, in cities where tent cities have arisen, they generally arise as survival encampments from homeless people themselves who, oh, yeah, because of the laws, have no other choice because of the living conditions. And then, you know, house people move in to support them, or alternately they arise as protests, encampments, which are sort of a function of civil libertarians and homeless people getting together, you know, to support the right of homeless people to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere, but, as we say in Santa Cruz, somewhere. So I don't know, but I mean, you are in probably the city with the most explicit and overt homeless encampments, possibly with the exception of Sacramento, though I understand today they were, or yesterday they were, clearing away the Sacramento encampments.
That's what I heard too.
I haven't gotten much information there. The organizations up there who are supposedly covering that shock, Sacramento Homelessness Organizing Committee, is very closed-mouthed about this, and also rather timid. They're suggesting people go to shelters and kind of hide out until the shelters are full, even though they have a full-blown lawsuit against the Sacramento camping ordinance done by a very efficient and successful attorney, Mark Maron, who's won, I would say, millions of dollars in strip search lawsuits in other cities. He's actually suing another city in Arizona, where he's got another lot settlement coming up. It's called Santa Cruz, interestingly enough, Santa Cruz, Arizona. But let me get back to that original question, which you tried to redirect me to a few minutes ago. The H Street encampment, also known as Taco Flats, is that right?
Well, people call it all kinds of things. It's a large, like block-long expanse of a vacant lot, and then at the far end of it, the far south end of it, is a overpass which people live under. So you've sort of got two different encampments going on there at the same time.
They have two names, both of them, or?
Well, the one under the overpass has been called New Jack City for a long time.
So it is it's New Jack City and Taco Flats, if you will, or?
People call it
the 8th Street encampment.
They call it Taco Flats, or they'll call it Little Tijuana.
Little Tijuana, okay.
A lot of Mexican nationals that live there, and they have been the initiators of building some of the most substantial houses that are in the encampment. You know, with walls and pitched roofs and foundations and the whole thing.
Well, there is a story on Indy Bay that you have written specifically. It's titled Hazmat Emergency Response Unit Arrives at Homeless Encampment. And people can go to, you know, I guess they can, the quickest way to get to that story is to Google for, I don't know, Rhodes Homeless, Fresno, H Street Encampment. I don't know, what's the quickest way? I guess, you can go to Indy Bay / Central Valley and find it pretty close to the main, you know, the main stories. But in that story, you don't really go beyond what happened back on, what was it, April 7th or April 6th?
Yeah, about a week ago.
What's happened since? They moved in, they put up barbed wire on one side, they told people they had to leave. The mayor said, oh, we've got homeless money, but of course they didn't distribute much of it. The vouchers aren't due till the end of the month, correct me if I'm wrong on any of this stuff. Even though they have millions of dollars of federal homeless czar money supposedly to spend with your old buddy Greg, you know, controlling the money bags, what's happened, you know, around those issues? Is money being distributed for these folks? Are they able to come back together? We were a little concerned, or I was, that they would just be bought off temporarily, dispersed, and lose any kind of even potential solidarity that they had in the 8th Street encampment. But what happened? What's happening?
Well, all that's happened so far, Robert, is that the Union Pacific Railroad came in and dug up this big petroleum container that was under the ground there. They fenced the area off where it was. Everybody moved their houses and their tents away from that project. And then it took them a couple days to dig that up and haul it away. And everything has been just pretty stagnant ever since. Nothing has really changed since I wrote that story. I was out there yesterday, and it's just like it was. There's fences all around the encampment with razor wire and barbed wire on it. There's the fence around the construction zone, which is just dead center in the encampment, which takes up probably 200 feet square right in the middle of it. And then people have just moved their things away from that and sort of bunched up in different areas. They're waiting for the next shoe to drop. And what I'm told that will be is that on the 23rd of this month, the city of Fresno will start providing vouchers for people to get housing. Greg Barfield, who's the newly hired homelessness czar in Fresno, he told me that there would be vouchers for everybody, all homeless people that wanted them, and the housing would be for an indefinite period of time, and there would be no preconditions on people accessing the housing. In other words, if you had mental health issues, you can get housing. If you needed job training, you can get housing.
You had a drug and alcohol problem?
Yeah. So you have housing.
It's part of the housing first notion that you get them housing first, and that's the way to get these intractable homeless riffraff out of our nice areas that we want to gentrify, right?
Well, that would be one way of putting it. On the other hand, it's a much better use of funds than bulldozing them.
Yep.
So then, more recently, Greg has sort of backed off from that and said, well, we're only looking at maybe 100 or 200 people, and the vouchers will only be for a month or two, and we're going to take the people who need housing most first. And I think by that he means people who are older, people who are sick, women that are pregnant or have children.
And this, of course, will require a $70,000 consultant and a study, right?
No, no, it's only $50,000.
Oh, good, okay, I was a little worried about
that. To send out to assess people. And that's really the stage that we're at right now. There was a van sitting there with two people in it who had forms that they were filling out to assess people. And one of the problems with that is going to be, that I could see right real quick, is there are a lot of people that aren't going to want to fill out the government form to get housing. There are a lot of people there that are undocumented workers that don't have a Social Security number, or that there are people who are concerned about IRS issues or whatever, and they just don't want to become a part of that system.
Well, aren't you going to have mobs of people who are up for the, I don't know, tax day demonstrations coming down and demanding that these illegal immigrants be returned to Mexico forthwith?
Well, that hasn't come up yet, but I anticipate something like that. Really, what's happened from the city, sort of what they said, is, well, we don't want to give everybody free housing because we're going to become a mecca for the homeless.
A magnet. The magnet
theory.
Fresno.
Yeah.
If actually housing was to be provided, the claim is in Santa Cruz, if they lift the sleeping ban, everybody will come to Santa Cruz to sleep, which I think is preposterous and isn't borne out by studies in other cities. But if you provide housing and services, and particularly jobs, that might be the basis for a mecca. Indeed, people reportedly, if you believe Grapes of Wrath movie, which probably isn't the best source, you know, they get the flyers, come and pick peaches, and they come from Oklahoma to pick peaches, you know, that sort of thing.
Right. Well, they use the same argument, Robert, to say why they refuse to put drinking water in any of the existing encampments and portable toilets and trash bins, that if you make it too attractive to people, they'll just come from all over. And that hasn't been my experience. I haven't seen a invasion of homeless people coming here because there's the potential of having drinking water at an encampment.
Any legal support for, I know you have a secondary lawsuit against, the mission or some such thing for discriminatory treatment of homeless people nearby, destruction of their property?
Right. Yeah. Well, there's that's ongoing because the director of the rescue mission sent his crew out to take and destroy homeless people's property.
What's the status of that lawsuit right now?
I haven't heard for a while. I'm due to get a report on it before too long.
And are the attorneys who brought the previous lawsuit interested in following up with, you know, what obviously are new methods of harassing, persecuting, and criminalizing the homeless that the police and the city are undoubtedly, I presume, are putting together, since you say they are continuing, although you've suggested that they're only going after the homeless in some areas, and it sounds like the H Street encampment, you know, is to some extent being left alone, although they're doing this construction project. They haven't insisted, as in Sacramento, that supposedly they're insisting that they leave.
Right. I think they'll get to that. I think that within a month there'll be a crisis there, because I think Union Pacific will force people to leave, and then they will put gates on the door, the entryways, lock it all up, and people will no longer be able to use it. Then that's going to create a crisis for the city, because there'll be hundreds of people that then have to go somewhere. I'm encouraging people to move down to City Hall and camp out there until there's something better.
Yeah, but this would be the same area that they're planning to, the mall that they're planning to clear, right? Or is that not the case?
Yeah, it's just a little ways away. The City Hall is across the street.
And will you be pitching your own tent there, Mr. Send Others Down to Get Arrested?
Right. I probably would if people would go. I would certainly join in on the fun.
Nobody's buying this proposal?
Huh?
People aren't picking up on this one? Or?
Well, you know, people nod and shake their head and say, yeah, that's what we need to do. But I haven't got the mass of people you would need to move in that direction.
Well, you do is you hire a few buses, you throw a pizza party, everybody comes.
Right.
And, you know, then they may leave or they may stay. We did that, well, we didn't have a pizza party, but we had some food, we had some speakers.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 2007, we called it Homies for the Homeless. And mm-hmm. the people who we thought were going to stay for one night stayed for six, although the police eventually drove them away from our city hall in Santa Cruz in September of 2007. And indeed, we have our own, in Santa Cruz, we have an armory closure. It happened, I think, on the 14th, maybe the 15th, where, you know, the winter shelter is closed here. And I assume you may have some similar situation in Fresno where the winter shelter is closed, or?
Well, we really have almost no shelter space at all. What they do when it gets to be under, like, 30 degrees, or it gets to be over 110 degrees or 105 degrees, they open up some community centers where go and sleep. So there's several locations around the city that have heating and cooling when needed. But it's, you know, it's totally inadequate. And I think that in the next month there will be a crisis, because these people from the 8th Street encampment will be forced out. And who knows where they'll go. I mean, when that happens, they may well head down to City Hall and camp out and ask the czar for an answer.
I see. So you're hoping that the czar will get more inquiries and hopefully that we will see more action. Of course, you will no doubt be arranging for a new union of the homeless in Fresno, right?
I don't know. We'll see what happens.
What's happening in Madera and other cities? You talked about, you told me an ACLU lawyer may be going undercover to keep an eye or an ear on the abuses in those cities, those neighboring cities around the homeless? Or is that something? Am I spilling the beans here?
Yeah. I don't think.
Never mind.
I don't think they're probably listening to pirate radio
probably
in Santa
not,
Cruz
no,
over
yeah.
in Madera, but, you know, they could be. We will send somebody in. We haven't done it yet. We've heard tales of, you know, that it's some kind of medieval snake pit in there, and we want to have people go in with cameras and take pictures, and then we'll do the story on it when it's done. But haven't got anybody in there yet.
There's a protest coming up in Sacramento called the Safe Grounds Protest. I guess it's the 20th or the 21st?
21st. It's on Tuesday.
Tuesday. You going up there to that protest?
Yeah. I'll bring a horde of people with me.
Wow. Who knows? Maybe Santa Cruz will contribute a contingent and can wander on up. Although, so far, nobody has volunteered to, get a pickup truck and load folks up, you know, in the back with straw and, you know, who knows what. But, you know,
you got to have a rocking chair up there too, Robert.
A rocking chair, or, you know, certainly I got to have a bathrobe and a teddy bear, which, I couldn't leave home without those. We're talking with Mike Rhodes, Fresno, California, writer, activist, tolerant taker of abuse. I think we spent a lot of time denouncing you for your ties with the poverty pimps. And on one occasion, we had to say your willingness to try to give the new czar the benefit of the doubt and try to work with the city.
All I was saying, Robert,
give the city credit for what it's done.
It's better to give homeless people vouchers for housing than bulldozing them. That's all I'm saying.
Right, but the bulldozing isn't really a choice anymore. They don't really have that choice because they've been so badly slapped by the federal lawsuit. So, mm-hmm. I always. You know, I'm a little wary of giving people credit when they're only doing something under pressure. Although I guess it's a nice psychological tactic to say, "Well, very good, you didn't." When actually, what you're doing is you got a gun to their back, so to speak. Is there any other news that you want to report on? You think that we should know about? I guess it would be nice for you to talk a little bit and if you have any advice for the people here who want to set up tent cities or a tent city in Santa Cruz. I know they may be listening to this broadcast and. Can benefit from your wise experience, Mr. I've never been in a tent city in my life except taking pictures.
Well, let's see. Where were they going to build this tent city?
Well, that's one of the questions. Santa Cruz has a lot of greenbelt space.
Yeah.
It has a number of parks, I suppose. In fact, in theory, there's actually a bizarre provision that was actually cooked up by some right-wing progressives, I call them, who wanted to embarrass the centrist progressives on the city council, none of whom wanted to really help the homeless back at the beginning of the millennium. Kennedy and Primack were the right-wing progressives, and Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar were the left-wing progressives, or the centrist progressives. And the issue was the actual tent city that had already been set up called Camp Paradise in Santa Cruz. Camp Paradise was washed away in a flood. But while it was there, it garnered a lot of community support because it was kept fairly clean. They kind of ran out or localized drug dealers and drug sales. You had to be part of the inner elite to use the drug deals and sales, or you had to do so more discreetly. And violence was internalized, as to say, the leader of the camp brutalized some of the people in the camp, but they didn't brutalize strangers, and they didn't brutalize, there was a general feeling of hope that here was a solution for people. The homeless service center would send people to this camp in the summer because there was no other place for people to go, and there still is mm-hmm. no other place, and the camp no longer exists except mm-hmm. as a sort of a rump effort miles away from the city being run in a church ground, but it isn't really usable for the original purpose. But there are places for people in Santa Cruz that could be, the camps could be set up. There are, I don't know how many acres of the Pogonip, which of course would enrage environmentalists, no doubt, that 1 acre of their precious Pogonip is taken up with, survival camp area for homeless people. I think there are 500 acres up there. I'm not sure how many acres the Pogonip. The number escapes me. But, Santa Cruz is surrounded by a green belt. And so there are areas where people could, a campground could be set up. There's even an old campground called Bob's Pine Grove Campground, which was a city campground run for private profit for a while until it went into disuse. So there are places where people could set up a campground. The problem is going to be that this has been tried in the past. There's been the Eco Village movement, which was tried by a lot of respectable people, including author Paul Lee, who wrote The Quality of Mercy, a book which denounces me repeatedly, but nonetheless has some interesting history of homeless stuff.
That's an interesting thing. Well, there's an architect here that his term for what he wanted to develop was an Eco Village. And the concept was to buy some property in the downtown area, which we're in the process of doing, actually. The upside of the down economy is that property here is just incredibly cheap. We're buying a third of an acre with a 3-bedroom, 1-bath house on it in downtown for $28,500.
Well, I guess now is the time to buy property, if any time is.
Yeah, so... Yeah. So the idea is to use that house as a community center that's run by and for homeless people, and to build we're talking about 6 units, which would be on the property, and these would be built very ecologically sane, so like using straw bale and passive heating and cooling, solar energy. So the cost of maintaining it would be really low. And the idea that Art Dyson has, he's the architect, is that this could be replicated all over the community. So you would have this dispersal of people. People wouldn't be all concentrated in one place and sort of ghettoized, but you'd have these beautiful environmentally healthy, collectively run villages all over the city. So that's kind of the direction we're going in. Maybe the people that are thinking about setting up some tent city there could come up with some version of that.
I'll put them in touch with you, and you can, you know, you guys can share ideas.
I
presented my notion that you really need to have a concentration of people essentially in a protest encampment, essentially as a way of putting pressure on the city to open up some of the areas that it's previous kind of hoarding off to the side for upper middle class use when there's survival needs for poor people that are being blatantly ignored, and they're just trying to drive people away and gentrify areas. But, you know, I'm happy to pass on, you know, your information to this group of students and see what they want to do with it. Anything else, Mike Rhodes of Fresno, that you wish to tell us before we move on to more mundane matters?
Okay, well, the last thing I'd like to leave you with is you'd ask about whether the attorneys were interested in, you know, participating in some of the ongoing problems that we're having. They are continued to be engaged to some extent, but they're in the Bay Area, and, you know, they're just not able to participate at that level. But what has happened is you get other people who are interested. I had a conversation with people who are looking at a lawsuit directed at the Poverello House for and the city of Fresno for running the tool sheds. Their contention is that the tool sheds are in gross violation of people's housing rights, and that they're not ADA compliant. They don't have heating, they don't have cooling, they don't have indoor toilets, and they're just blatantly illegal, and they want to challenge that in court. So I think what you'll have is, rather than the same people doing different lawsuits, you'll have different groups of attorneys that will engage on different issues, you know, in areas that they're interested in, like housing rights and in this case. So, anyway, I just wanted to let you know are ongoing legal struggles going on.
What about foreclosure victims? Is there a lot of that happening in Fresno, or is that are we seeing a new dawn of economic power with Obama?
Well, there are hundreds, thousands of foreclosures in Fresno and boarded up houses. The only organized group that I've seen to challenge that here is PICO, which is this organizing project. They had a bus trip to Washington, D.C. to lobby for funding to, I think, avoid foreclosures or something like that. But at the grassroots level, what you have more of is people just living in the houses, opening them up and living there, and not doing it as a organized political expression, but just as a matter of life and death. People, you know, there are houses that are abandoned, and people move in and live there.
In Santa Cruz, and I guess in Sacramento yesterday, April 15th, there were a lot of tax protests, which were portrayed by the media and, you know, by Obamatons, who, you know, regard any criticism of the government as being, you know, an attack on the Fuhrer. As being right-wing Republicans, and indeed many of them are, I'm sure, and were. What's the situation in Fresno? Did you have a lot of protesting on April 15th, and did you pay your taxes, big boy?
Well, there were there was a huge tea party thing down at the university. I think they said there was like 7,000 to 10,000 people down there. Pretty big by most standards of demonstrations in this area. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, some of their members went to one of the post offices and handed out flyers about military spending. So, yeah, that phenomena of being in revolt against taxes it's here as much as it is.
Any chance of a union between tax protesters and homeless advocates?
I think they're two totally different worlds, Robert. It would never occur to me to work on that. I'm going to have to leave it there, though.
All right. Well, let's expand our horizons and unite with them fascists and see what you can get together there on.
Okay, I'll think about that.
All right, man.
Okay, hey, you take it easy. I'll see you later.
All right, thank you, Mike.
Maybe up in Sacramento on Tuesday.
That would be interesting, and I'll put out a call, see how many people are interested in doing that.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks a lot. Okay. Bye-bye. And that was Mike Rhodes of Fresno, who you can, well, you can read him and you can see his photographic and video work by just going to the indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. That's Mike, R-H-O-D-E-S, Mike Rhodes. Google for Mike Rhodes of Fresno and you'll just find some interesting stuff. It's almost 7 o'clock. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. And it looks like we have a caller calling in. I think this is our second caller, second guest. We'll see. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, it's Clive here.
Hey there, Clive. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you well. How are you doing?
I can kind of hear you. It's a lot of not so much static as fuzz and hum. Maybe
how's
I should.
Is that any better?
Try say something else.
How's that then? Is that a little better?
You have such a mellow, calm voice, you know. Think hysterical. Get a little more emphatic, you know. Denounce the powers that be.
Denounce the powers that be. And how should we do that?
Well, that's a good question. But let me, I think we can probably hear you. And I should have said before, and I didn't last, we had a caller before you, Clyde.
I was listening.
Oh,
was
great.
Listening.
No, thank you then. People can call in and ask questions of, make comments on, or give reactions to what Clyde and I are talking about by calling the other line. We actually have an open line, 427-3772, 427-FRSC, 427-3772. Clyde, you recently were tried in court and in a kind of a stealth attack, which you didn't expect. We've talked to you before in about deputies arresting you, endangering your children, what seemed to be a child custody case. You've lost your house. I mean, there are all kinds of things that have happened to you. Do you want to give a brief capsule summary of your situation and what's happened most recently?
Sure. You know, we've chatted many times on the phone. It all started about 6 years ago when the shooting instructor for the sheriffs ran up to my car and tried to blow my head off in front of my kids without any probable cause or any logical reason other than perhaps some of the things I was building technologically or my ex-wife. And we never could find that out because whenever I sue them, they refuse to come to court. And but they've been busy filing case after case against me. We're on to our 7th, 8th, and 9th cases. And the 7th case was an interesting one. Whenever I get stopped by sheriffs or CHP in Santa Cruz, they arrest me, in essence. So I had a arrest by CHP where they stopped me, gave me the clown test, and then took me and did the 8 blowjob tests and then 3 stick'em jobs with the blood tests. And, of course, I wasn't over the limit, so I sued them. They didn't pitch up. But about a year ago, I was traveling from comedy night to some friends to Castaways, and my friends said, as they're driving out the parking lot, the pickup got me to jump in the back of a pickup truck. And quite interesting, a little deja vu feeling there, getting back to South Africa, where, of course, we'd ride around in the back of pickup trucks all the time. Anyway, they told me it'd be fine if we just lie down in the back of the pickup truck and we could head off to the next party.
Which is illegal, Cly. You have no seat belts in the back of a pickup truck. How could you?
Have you ever heard of a thing called the Ninth Amendment?
The Ninth Amendment. I think that's one of them amendments nobody pays. That's the right to privacy, isn't it?
Well, no. Your rights shall not diminish.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, I think that went out with button shoes. You know.
Now, if your rights don't diminish, how can you have something one day and then not have it the next day?
Because there are laws. We are a civilization of laws, Clyde.
Now, the law, of course, the law is the law. I respect the law. The law of the Constitution is the highest level law of the land, overrules all other laws. And if someone tries to make a law underneath it which contradicts that of the Constitution, it's null and void.
Yes, but are you... Okay, so anyway, you were in the back of a truck, and so anyway, without a seatbelt, you vicious individual, violating, I would imagine, some ordinance.
Thoroughly enjoying the pursuit of happiness.
Yes.
But anyway, we got stopped by by a diligent CHP officer who pulled us over and asked us to all identify ourselves. Of course, I wasn't driving, so I didn't have my driver's license with me, so I gave him my business card.
So you weren't driving, you were in the back.
I was in the back. Actually, you can watch the whole scene because, as I advocate nowadays, if you ever get stopped by a cop anywhere, start your video camera rolling.
And so you videoed the whole thing?
The whole thing. Yeah, you can go to the Liberty for Life site, libertyforlife.com, and click on the bottom menu. There is a just to the top menu, you'll see the government abandons the law, LFL chairman faces life in prison. Click on that, and that'll take you to a link, and a page a little bit down, and you can see a link in April 1. Watch the arrest here. And you can actually watch the whole tape.
So if people want to see it, they can go to libertyforlife.com and look for April 1 on the website?
Yeah, go to click on the top menu, the bottom of the top menu. There's a government abandons the law, LFL chairman faces life in prison.
Life in prison, okay.
And we go down to the April 1 section just in there. You can click a link and you can watch the arrest. I think. Anyway, I handed him my business card. And then, of course, as you know, I have lots of friends, and he asked me to announce my birth date over all of my friends. Of course, I didn't want to announce my birth date, so I said,
"You are just you're a shy guy."
I'm shy, yeah. So I said, "Run my name," but they want to make a scene of demanding that I announce my birth date.
Now, let me ask you before we go any further: what time of day or night was this?
This was about 11:30-ish at night.
And where did this happen?
This was Portola, on the standard stomping grounds of CHP, where they sit and...
Portola Avenue in Capitola area, or...?
No, heading towards the Capitola area, just before... Oh.
And how many people were with you?
Utopia. There were four of us in the back of the pickup, and I think three in the front.
And how many police officers were involved in this, or deputies, I should say?
Two to start with. So anyway, they're making a big scene. Of course, then I asked the police officer what the mens rea and corpus delicti was for stopping the vehicle.
And I use English for those of us who don't understand such terms.
Well, there's three primary elements to every crime. And the legal elements, so if you ever go and learn about the law, you're going to be taught about the three mandatory elements to a crime. And they give you, of course, the Latin, which is mens rea, actus rea, corpus delicti, which is act, intent, and damage. So every crime has to have all three elements present. If they're not three elements present in the crime, it's not a crime. And this is a lesson one would imagine that every law enforcement officer receives.
And again, those three elements are?
Act, intent, and damage.
Act, intent,
rea,
and damage.
Mens rea, actus rea, and corpus delicti. Corpus delicti, the delectable corpus. You know, when they say, show me the body of the crime, that is the...
And you are certainly a delectable corpus, I'll tell you that.
Of course, the CHP officers, who turned out to be rookies, about, I think, 8 months on the force, had absolutely no clue what these fundamental elements of law were, to my surprise.
And they were probably uninterested in having you teach them.
Well, they then asked me to get out of the truck, and of course I asked him, is that a request or an arrest? When he informed me that it was not an arrest, but it was a request, I declined to get out of the truck, which is my right. Of course, this then, they escalate the situation. I understand the police officers are now getting training on how to cause conflict, a good old Hegelian dialect. In fact, I heard of a sheriff who resigned specifically because of that, because they're starting to get training.
You mean locally they're getting training on
how to provoke
conflict?
Across the board. Yeah, across the board. They're being trained on how to cause conflict.
Now, what specific testimony do you have that leads you to believe this? I mean, what...
I have a sheriff who I know who resigned based on that when he went to class on how to cause conflict. She gave him a class on that subject. I would love anyone out there to get us more data on that. a lot of these guys, when they resign, they just want to get out of the way, and they know the inside, so they're mum. They won't talk about it.
So, so you were told, you said, you know, is this a request or an arrest? And they said, the rookie CHP guy said, just a request. He said, well, I respectfully decline. Then what happened?
Then it eventually escalated until he said it was an order.
He didn't say it was an arrest.
No, he said it was an order. So I got out of the truck.
Uh-huh.
And as I got out of the truck, he assaulted me. He climbed into me, so physically just whacked into me, and my camera gets knocked down. And one of the officers grabbed my camera and turned it off. And my friend picked up, got the officer to give back the camera, and she started the camera rolling again. They arrested me, took me off. Now, actually, one of the Santa Cruz sheriffs came by, and they said, do you know this guy? And, of course, he ran my name and gave them my driver's license and birth date in less than a minute, which they could have done right up front.
Uh-huh.
They then arrested me.
For?
Well, they said I was intoxicated, so I said I want to have a breath analyzer test.
Uh-huh. Breathalyzer.
They wouldn't give me one. Refused to give me one because they knew I wasn't drunk. They then sent the rest of my friends off, who some of them were a little bit pickled, I must admit, but they were in the back of the pickup truck, and they let them drive off in the back of the pickup truck.
Uh-huh.
So the interesting thing in this case is we've got the whole thing on tape, including the officers assaulting me. So I suspected the court and the district attorney's office to drop this like hotcakes.
And what was the date of this incident?
Let me see. It must have been... maybe I can probably pull that up. Did I commit my mind to disk?
Well, more or less, what was the month?
Oh, I'd have to look, to be honest.
What was the year?
It was last year.
Last year, okay.
I think it was around November or something.
November last year.
Around there. You know my pleadings. But anyways, I went to court, and they said, and I've been, the last saga I had, the 8th and the 9th malicious cases they filed against me, Irwin Joseph, dear old Commissioner Junk Justice Erwin Joseph.
Yes, yeah.
I'm suing him, and I'm suing him for very serious charges. So he filed to get himself dismissed from the lawsuit I'm filing against him, and he issued an order to evict me from my home the very day he had his motion to try and get himself dismissed from the case I was prosecuting against him. Of course, no legal right to issue an order like that. It's actually a criminal act on behalf of Irwin Joseph in the open, and it's black and white. And the first time he issued the order, I called up the sheriffs. Kate Wells also called up the sheriffs and said, this is a bogus order. It's void. It's obviously not legal. And they said, well, they agreed, and they didn't do anything about it. And I also put Irwin Joseph on notice that my roommate, who was in critical care, would be seriously affected by an illegal eviction order or any such threats to her livelihood or where she lived.
This all happened before the November incident with the truck and the CHP deputy.
Yeah, this happened after the. Let me look at my notes here when we got arrested for the pursuit of happiness. I've got so many cases filed against me. So I've got files and files of data.
Right, right.
Let's have a look here.
We're talking with Clive Bustrade, who's... how would you describe yourself, Clive? What is your profession? Just who the heck are you?
Well, I've been in the tech industry most of my career. I was building very high-speed internet, and unbeknownst to me, I was building a network which appeared to be jumping up and down on the New World Order. We're building 1 gigabit per second connections anywhere in the world. We're launching 100 satellites out of Russia. We're also building next-generation banking systems that would have eliminated the banking scandals and the depressions we have going on now. We're building next-generation education systems. All the things that the New World Order and this current administration desperately don't want us to have in America. At the moment, I'm working on a new project. We're working on engines which run on water. So I seem to be put in the forefront of technology where we're essentially opening up the new Renaissance and this old world order, which has been trying to kill America since the last Renaissance Reformation, is all over me. And Santa Cruz County and Santa Cruz County officials are obviously linked in very much so with the New World Order, particularly in, as it relates to Agenda 21, and I'm high on their target list, obviously.
You know, I don't talk much about New World Order, Agenda 21, and so forth, because I regard it as, you know, kind of right-wing stuff, which I'm not really, and I'm not being critical of it. I'm saying, though, that there are those who are very much persuaded of, you know, there's an international conspiracy to create a North American Union, and, you know, New World Order, Federal Reserve System, UN domination, all these, I mean, all of which are claims made by what I call right-wing groups, but not necessarily without some merit at some point. You know, I'm just, I, have no, a, I what I want to yeah, say, what, though, what, is, what, my question, though, is, you know, KSCO, which is a radio station which management, Kay Zwirling, apparently places a lot of stock in this stuff. Have you gotten any kind of support from, you know, any local groups that, you know, are concerned about, you know, the broader implications of your struggle with authority and your arrests and also your sense of where it's all coming from?
Yeah, I actually got tremendous support from across the country and locally, and I was starting an organization called Copper Cards. In fact, we're getting ready to launch Copper Cards, and we're in the middle of our fundraising drives when they...
Well, I've got to tell you, Clive, I've been hearing about Copper Cards for a year. You've been telling me you've been ready to launch it for a year. So when is the launch going to happen?
We were actually in the middle of the launch in September when they arrested me.
Oh, really? So that was delayed after your arrest, and it's been delayed ever
Copper
since?
Copper Cards has been... I've had to go and get heads down and start trying to earn money so I can afford to defend myself. After the Irwin Joseph issued the order a second time and again tried to have himself dismissed from the lawsuit I was prosecuting against him.
Copper Cards, is a sort of an attempt to advise people of their rights in dealing with the law, the police, and so forth, right?
It's two things. One of the key elements we recognize, and I think this is potentially one of the flaws, and I have a huge respect for the founders. The founders were tremendous guys. They gave us everything on a silver platter. If only people would read the damn Constitution, it would help.
You mean those old white slave owners, those male slave owners that you love so much? Go ahead, though. I'm sorry.
They were also being hammered by King George and the Crown, and, you know, they had the Boston Tea Party.
Right, there was a division in the ruling class, but I don't know how much it affected ordinary people. I mean, that's always been a big question. I suppose people were better off under their own, you know, local tyrants rather than foreign tyrants, but it's always been a matter of, you know, some annoyance to me when people talk about those wonderful founding fathers. We hear so much about that. I kind of think, no, you know, the wonderful slave-owning founding fathers were providing rights for a relatively small number of people, but maybe
they now apply to everybody. So those rights that they established in the Bill of Rights
are
critical and key, and they're the heart and soul of law in America, and they provide us a guarantee of liberty, life, and the pursuit of happiness.
They would if they were asserted by the community. Yes.
Well, all of our public officials take oaths of office to uphold the Constitution.
And I have a number of oaths that I would throw at those public officials, but that's another story.
They break it. So, for example, the Fifth Amendment. What's the Fifth give us? You know that, don't you?
Constitutional discussion is interesting, but get back to your particular case of interest,
because
you were recently tried in a flash trial, right? Kind of like a flash flood?
That was a flash trial. So, of course, I've had to essentially put Copper Cards and everything else on hold and go and work for a company so I can earn money. And I'm working for this company that makes generators which use water as fuel. And So I've been heads down. It's a startup. We haven't raised capital. We're about to raise capital. And I don't have any capital. The sheriffs, when they arrested me, and incidentally, after calling them the second time, they set up a meeting with me to go and meet with them to discuss this illegal order Irwin Joseph had issued. They set that up to meet with them on September the 9th. On September the 6th, when I went to pick up my little boys outside Safeway, they had a SWAT team waiting there to arrest me before they even had the meeting. They threw me in jail, demanded I pay the sheriff $200,000 in bail money, which bankrupted me, wiped me out. And then while I was in jail with this $200,000 bail on my head, Irwin Joseph rushed in and ordered that I may not go within 100 yards of my home, and also ordered that I may not communicate with my two little boys. Now, these are the little boys that the cops shot at me in front, shot at me in front of my little boys. They nearly murdered my little boys. These are little boys who they kidnapped right after trying to murder me in front of them, and then interrogated Richard, my oldest boy, a month after. These boys have been through hell from Santa Cruz.
And what's the basis? I'm sorry, but,
I just got to put on the radio here that our officials in Santa Cruz, both all our board of supervisors, because they're all aware of that, all of our lawyers in Santa Cruz, because they're aware of that, all of our sheriffs in Santa Cruz, and the district attorney's office, they are the lowest down pieces of scum you will find in society. These people are lower than low.
Let me ask you again, because I mean, I hear your passion and I hear your characterization of the officials.
Irwin Joseph ordered that I may not communicate with my little boy.
What was the basis? What did he claim was the basis for his order that you couldn't communicate with your kids?
His basis of ordering me is because I'm suing him because he's a criminal.
No. What did he say in his own? You know, what was his claim as to why
he was? I was a flight risk.
Wait, what would that have to do with communication with your kids? You might be a flight risk, but why would that have anything to do with your kids? What was his basis there?
Irwin Joseph. I think we need to, in fact, the trouble is every time I sue Irwin Joseph, in fact, we had a grand jury indictment of Irwin Joseph in regard to his crimes.
Okay, again, you're not answering my question, Clive. What did Irwin Joseph put in the papers that said Clive Bustray cannot have contact with his children because, and what did he say?
He claimed I was a flight risk.
That you were a flight risk.
Yeah.
Why would that have anything to do with contact with your children?
You ask him. That's what
it was. Oh, so he thought you might get a hold of the kids and flee the jurisdiction.
Which I could do anyway.
Well, that's a very... So in other words, let me understand this properly. That was the only basis on which he said you couldn't communicate with your children because you were a flight risk, not because you were a nutcase, not because you were a danger to the kids, not because you were a foaming lunatic, none of that stuff.
No, that's the only reason.
Because you don't sound like a foaming lunatic, a nutcase, or a danger to your kids, and you don't sound like a flight risk because you sound pretty determined to fight this. But you know, I'm just trying to understand.
That's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. You know, the bottom line is I'm suing them, so they're just assaulting me with malicious prosecution after malicious prosecution. They've stolen my home. They've stolen my children. And they keep on filing these utterly bogus cases against me.
Now you
like this case now. Now they're filing 5 felonies and 1 misdemeanor based on claiming that I disobeyed an executive officer's order, Irwin Joseph's illegal order to evict me from my
And you
home.
Had a pretty nice house. I know you've invited me up there. You have
I
a nice
have,
swimming
I had a
pool.
I was looking Monterey Bay, yeah.
No longer yours anymore. It's been
I had
taken.
I can't go within 100 yards of it.
But, I mean, that was given to your wife, your ex-wife, or some such thing? Or?
My ex-wife, who I paid off for the house 6 years ago, pursuant to a stipulated court order. Now, if you don't know anything about court orders, stipulated court orders are equivalent to final judgments. I had to pay her off 30 days. From when that was issued in 2002.
Well, let me ask you this again, kind of returning to the original subject which we were talking about, which is the flash trial. You were arrested in this vehicle. You were assaulted. They told the rest of the folks in the truck to take off, and there you were alone with, how many sheriffs, how many deputies and or Highway Patrol were there with you alone on that road in Portola, on Portola?
Well, they were the two, and then two others came by, but the two took us, two other subjects.
And what happened next in that situation?
So they locked me up, put me in jail, and of course I got out, and now I've been fighting all these cases. Now, I can't afford to hire my lawyer. I do have a lawyer lined up from Berkeley, and I can't afford to pay his fee yet. So I've been asking the court to give me time, and it's probably only about a month before I can afford to hire him.
So you were looking for time for the lawyer, but they suddenly threw a quick trial at you, right?
They threw a trial at me, and I said I need only a month more. I expect to have funds coming in where I can hire the lawyer. And they said, no, we're going ahead with the trial. So I then said, well, give me a public defender. I can't afford a lawyer. You throw me in jail. You've stolen my home, my children. You made me pay you $200,000 to get out. Give me a public defender. And they wouldn't even...
Who was the judge who made these rulings?
This is our new judge. What's her name?
Ariadne Simons?
Simons, yeah.
Yeah, she's the one I go before tomorrow morning, although, folks, for those who are interested, I have a hearing before her for trespass at the Metro Transit Center, which I've talked about on this show before. My hearing is at 10 o'clock, but it's essentially an arraignment, so there's nothing exciting is likely to happen there.
Yeah. You're being arraigned. You're being arraigned. Now, let's just have a look at that Fifth Amendment. It's worth, you know, we all understand that the law of the land is the United States Constitution. And we all understand that the Constitution is the highest level law of land. It overrules every law there is. If you make a law which contradicts the Constitution, it's null and void. Now, the Fifth Amendment deals with that. The Fifth Amendment, and it's worth reading because people just don't read it.
Right, but before we get in, I know you're trying to instruct us on how to deal with an arraignment, but and actually, your friend Kate Wells is going to be with me at the arraignment, mainly because she thinks the charge is so bogus that she thinks she's going to make some money in a civil lawsuit.
Well, is it
lawsuit.
Grand jury indictment or presentment to...
well, this charges. Is an infraction. This is a minor charge.
What's an infraction?
What's that?
What's an infraction?
Oh, well, you know, we can go around that one for a while. An infraction is customarily considered...
It's
a minor type of crime created under the California Code in 1970. Wait a minute, let me give you, you know, their story is it's created, you know, in order to allow you to not risk jail, but only a fine or community service, yet not get a jury trial or a public defender. And, you know, I know that there are those who claim that infractions are phony crimes, or they're civil, or they're not criminal. But this isn't really something I want to talk about on the air right now, because I'm more concerned with what happened. Yeah, there's the time factor, but there's also what happened to you. I guess it was, what was it, last week or early this week when you were suddenly forced to go to trial on a charge? What was it, resisting arrest or assaulting an officer?
The trial denied the right to counsel.
Right, what was the charge?
The charge was, there were two charges. They said I was a PC-148 and a 167. They said I was resisting or obstructing an officer and I was drunk, was intoxicated. Now, the trouble was I had the whole thing on tape. So I showed the tape to the judge and the district attorney, which shows that I'm clearly not drunk, and it shows that I obeyed everything the officer asked. I gave an identification, which is more than sufficient, to the officer, and the officer assaulted me. Now, by law, that district attorney and the judge had to go in and file a case against the officer for assaulting me.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
That's not how it went. They put me in front of the jury. They wouldn't allow me to even put the code they charged me with in front of the jury.
What do you mean by that?
So you go online and you look up on the California law site, the government site, what the PC-148 is. It has a narrative of what it is. And if you look at that, you can print it out. Now, that's what I've been charged with. I wasn't even allowed to put that in front of the jury.
You mean you weren't allowed to cite what the code was?
No.
Who, you mean Ariadne Simons interrupted you when you tried to tell the jury what the code was?
Mm-hmm. I actually put it in a jury instruction. I also had it on a file in a presentation.
Well, tell me a little bit more about this trial. How long did it take?
It lasted 2.5 days.
How many hours each day?
Oh, I guess it's from... about 9 or 10 to about 4, 4:30.
And how many, did you have anybody assisting you, or were you completely on your lonesome?
Completely on my lonesome.
Should have called me up. I would have come into the courtroom and smiled at the judge.
I don't think smiles really help.
No, it didn't actually. I saw her myself face to face.
There's an interesting case which I think you should also look up, and a lot of your guys should know about a homeless guy. Do you know about the Lawson case?
Oh, sure. Famous case from the early 80s, yeah, Southern California.
African-American who has long hair.
Throughout the loitering laws. It's a very important case, yeah.
Very, very important case, and very similar
but
to
let's
mine.
Get back
but
to your case.
Yeah.
Let's get back to your
case. This is my case, and I was also denied any right to even talk about the Lawson case in front of the jury. It was completely censored. I was not allowed to present any facts relating to the Lawson case or even the standard Terry stop case. You know, Terry versus Ohio, the standard of means of gathering and getting in touch with the person and identifying yourself. I was not allowed to address the law in the least bit in front of the jury.
And give us an example. I mean, you would attempt to speak, and the DA would object. Would the DA object, or did the judge take the initiative herself?
The judge acted as the prosecution in this case. The DA, what was his name? Terry Randall or something. I forget his name. But he was quite pathetic and weak, so the judge took it on herself to be the prosecution.
Well, she, of course, comes from the DA's office, as you know.
Indeed, and she interjected objections. She actually acted as judge and prosecutor in the entire case.
Are you appealing this conviction?
Oh, of course. Not only that, but I'll be suing them over this one, too. I mean, each time they put me in jail, too, it gives me 24 hours a day to focus on going after them again, and that's obviously what I'll be doing in this case.
So this was a two-day trial for two charges. One was supposed drunkenness. One was resisting arrest or obstructing an officer, disobeying an officer's order. Any highlights of the trial that you think would be interesting for us to hear about?
I think particular highlights which... are relevant to what's going on is the fact that I was not allowed to even put the code before the jury. I was not allowed to address the law, in particular Supreme Court cases relating to how one identifies oneself to a police officer, or even the standard Terry stop process. I wasn't even allowed to put the CHP standard procedures for a fight and arrest before the jury.
Say that last again. It got lost in the transmission here.
The CHP has a procedure which they follow called site and release program. If you go on the CHP site, you can see that. And they, instead of arresting someone, they put them in the hands of a competent person and send them home.
Right.
That's fighting. And, of course, they sent all my friends home. They didn't cite any of my friends in the back of the pickup truck. They didn't cite anyone else, just myself. The other particularly interesting thing in this case was the obviousness of the shill, the plant that they put on the jury. Juror number one exhibited all the behavior of a shill, and I moved to have him dismissed from the jury. But the judge
What do you mean by a shill?
That's... on the jury, so how these criminals in our government, like Bob Lee and our other district attorneys, work, and our sheriffs and our judges, is they hire a person to sit on the jury, and that person is trained to convince the jurors. They'll focus on getting middle-aged women on the jury. That's their target audience for the jury. They then will give you your trial. They'll prevent you putting evidence in the law in front of the jury. They then will deny any of your jury instructions. Now, I gave, for example, standard FIJA jury instructions.
FIJA, for those who don't know, is Fully Informed Jury Association, which states that the jury is the judge of both the facts and the law. That is, say, if a jury finds a prosecution unlawful or a law unconstitutional, they can say not guilty, which they can, but judges have ruled since the Sparf versus Hansen case of the late 19th century that lawyers are not supposed to bring it up, and since you were acting as your own lawyer, you were not allowed to tell the jury this great secret that they have the power to say not guilty, which is called jury supremacy or jury nullification or jury independence, regardless of the instructions of the judge or the pleas of the DA. Am I right here?
Yes, actually, it's even deeper than that. If you go to the Constitution of the State of California, the 1849 one, the only one that was properly ratified, go to Article 1, Section 9, and in black and white it says the jury shall have the right to determine the law and the fact. Right there in the Constitution, no ambiguity whatsoever. So when any judge or district attorney steps up and says that the jury does not have the right to determine the law and the fact, they in fact commit treason, they violate the oaths of office, and they need to be arrested on the spot and carted off to jail.
Now, did you attempt to arrest the judge, and if not, why not?
Well, of course, the problem we have, and this is one of the purposes behind Copper Cards, and I also believe why they came to arrest me when we were getting funding for Copper Cards going, was that we want to create communities. We want to create communities where people stand together, where we take back governance by we the people for the people. Most of what we're seeing throughout the United States is that administrative agencies, executive office agencies, all claiming that they have the right to make the law, to be our judge, our prosecution, and everything else. And it's out of control. We've got them handing literally trillions of dollars to the guys who caused the Depression. We've got them throwing more people in jail, prison, and probation in this country than every other nation in the world combined. It's out of control. So what we have to do is we have to bring the people together and get governance back to we the people. I mean,
getting back to the two-day trial that you had, and what was that, Monday or Tuesday of last week or something like that?
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And obviously probably the judge told the jury, the judge said you could argue the law before her, but not before the jury. Was that what she said, pretty much?
I was just sensed. I was told that I got to keep quiet. I'm not allowed to talk about it. She deleted slides from my presentation. Wouldn't allow me to address anything relating to the law, not just the law as it relates to what the rights of the jury are, but the law such as Lawson case.
Well, were you allowed to address
the Terry Stop case?
Did she say you were allowed to address these issues in the absence of the jury in front of her in your final
right.
arguments?
So what you'll see, no. In fact, my final arguments, I was specifically censored from speaking about them there as well. And, this is quite astonishing. You can see the presentation I had and I used on the Liberty for Life site. If you go to that that same link, if you go
Did somebody video thing. This trial?
We had an application in. We filed an application with On Second Thought Media. William Wagner, On Second Thought, filed an application to videotape it. So we had it in, and then when it came to trial, in fact, we had Anthony J. Helder up to produce the trial and to videotape it. He came up here for that purpose, and Judge Simons denied it.
So the only record of the trial is the court's record. Are you getting a transcript of that record? Or?
Yeah, we've got it taped.
You actually have it now?
We've got it. Well, I don't have the transcript, but we've got the trial taped, and that will go up on the website.
Okay, and that tape of the trial is on the website?
It's going to be there shortly, yeah.
Will be there shortly. I'm not going to ask you if that's the official tape or not, because if you tell me it isn't, that's, I suppose, another felony they'll charge you with.
No, you're allowed to. In fact, when someone's committing a crime, the FBI tells you to wear a wire, don't they?
However, it's illegal in court to make a tape recording without the permission of the judge.
And when the judge is committing crimes, and you want to hold the judge in contempt for crimes they're committing, the FBI will tell you to go and wear a wire.
Did you get permission from the FBI? Did our local FBI come in and help you with this? Or?
Who says the FBI, which is an executive office agency, only has authority over Washington, D.C., has any authority in our local jurisdiction? They don't.
Well, then they probably couldn't give you permission to do this, could they?
Well, the biggest problem I'm noticing here, Tim, this is a problem with respect to the jury, and I think it all relates down to one simple fact, and that is that we've allowed the state to run our schools. No one in our local area has the slightest clue as to what the law is. I mean, people actually even, for example, think that Abraham Lincoln was honest. I mean, that's the most classic example. People going through state school here literally think that Abraham Lincoln was honest.
They believe that Abraham Lincoln was honest? I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's astonishing. I mean, you talk to any American who's gone through state school, they think Abraham Lincoln was honest. He was one of the most dishonest presidents. He was the only president that was so disliked when he came into power that he had to go in disguise.
Well, there was a civil war brewing, it's true. I mean, it had to do with the Republicans as well at that time.
Just look at that. No one knows what the Morrill tax is. Everyone knows what the Boston Tea Party was, which was a 2% to 5% tax. But they're clueless with respect to 37% tax that Abraham Lincoln imposed, called the Morrill tax, which was the underlying reason for that uncivil war. And it could have been a civil war. The South lawfully seceded from the Union.
We'll have to talk about this at another time.
It's a wonderful subject, but let's bounce back on.
And it's an interesting point. I've actually not heard of the, what do you call the tax?
The Morrill tax.
The Morrill tax. First of all, let's talk about it when I actually can hear you on the phone line, because you're really fading in and out, and I'm catching about, you know, like 80%, hopefully.
Oh, dear, we're coming over internet. Sorry about that.
It is a problem. Nonetheless, I think we're getting the gist of some of what you're saying. We're talking to Clive Boustrade, whose website is Liberty for Life. What's the website again?
LibertyForLife.com.
And I guess a lot of the documents and the audio of your arrest and perhaps the audio of the trial will be posted there soon.
Yeah, the video of the arrest is all there.
The video of the arrest and perhaps the audio of the trial. In any case, what's the next step? You were found guilty by the jury. After how long? How long did they take to find you guilty?
Well, they took about 4 hours deliberation, I think it was, and they had four pollings, and this is how these shills work. They basically they'll keep on working on that. So you have your final argument, and then their shill, their plant, which was juror number one in this case, goes in and works the jury like crazy until he gets them all to find you guilty. And I've seen this before in other juries and other trials. And what I'm doing now, of course, is I'm going to be polling the jury. I've sent off motions to be filed to poll the jury, to bring them back in, and to question as to the nature and cause of what they found me guilty of, and we're going to be questioning juror number one in particular with respect to his relationship.
Now, juror number one is a man or a woman?
Is a man, yes.
And did you actually talk to any of the jurors afterward?
No, they all filed out, but we'll be polling them, calling them back. And also what we're going to be doing is moving to impeach the judge. One of the other interesting things that happened in the trial was we had a transcript prepared, an accurate transcript, of the entire arrest from the videotape.
Right.
That was sent to the district attorney. What is his name?
Anyway, it was sent to her. Go ahead.
Randall or something like that. And sent to the district attorney, and he went and deleted out key statements. For example, the statement where you can hear on the tape, my friend saying, give me his camera, sir, after they'd knocked over my camera and snatched it so I couldn't record them assaulting me.
Now, were you able to play the tape for the jury?
Yep, we played the tape for the jury. We managed to get that in on evidence.
Did you point out where there were these differences between the transcript you had provided in which you say the DA deleted portions of it?
Instructed the judge directly, told her right at the desk, and showed her exactly what he'd done. She then, interestingly, started trying to impeach me at the end of the trial for disrespecting the district attorney, at which I started putting on the record exactly what he had done, at which point she sent him upstairs to get something.
Sent him upstairs?
Sent him upstairs to get something. In other words, quickly get him out of the courtroom so that she wouldn't have to admonish him. And we also, of course, caught the officers lying on the record.
Which officers? The CHP officers who arrested you?
Yeah.
And what were the nature of their lies? And who were they, by the way? What were their names?
I think it was Troy Vincent was the key guy.
Say it again. It's not coming.
Troy Vincent. These names will be up on the site. We'll have our pleadings. We'll put all the documentation on.
Troy Vincent was one of them. The other's name was?
I forget his name.
Okay. And what were the nature of their misstatements or lies?
Well, they first of all, they stated that I was standing up in the truck and being belligerent. The video clearly eliminated that. They also stated that I resisted arrest. And the video shows them assaulting me. So, these are flat-out lies. They're caught red-handed.
Did you have witnesses of your own who spoke to the whole
issue? Well, I got the videotape. The videotape, you can't beat.
Right, but did any of the witnesses come up and testify?
They pulled the driver up, who I didn't know, and he was trying to kiss ass with the cops.
The driver of the truck?
Yeah, yeah.
So this wasn't a friend of yours, this was just somebody you didn't know?
No,
what about the people in the back of the truck with you?
They're my friends, a very good friend of mine with me, and of course,
But did they volunteer to testify, or did they?
She did, but she's reluctant in testifying, and no one likes to go into court. And with respect to having the video, I felt it not necessary. The video proved everything.
But of course, the only witnesses were the cops against you, the truck driver who you said was trying to kiss ass with the cops, and. Did you testify on your own behalf, or did you just say nothing and let the video speak?
No, I had the videotape. The videotape was all I needed. The videotape proves everything. You can't argue the video.
Okay.
The video shows me identifying myself to the officer. It shows me handing the business card. It shows him acknowledging it's my business
card. We have on the air here Clive Bustrade, who is, and you are facing a sentence of how much when you're sentenced?
No idea. No idea what sentence.
Well, these are two misdemeanors. It's probably either anywhere between 1 year and 2 years. Usually it's 6 months to a year as a maximum for misdemeanors. I assume these are misdemeanors, not felonies, right?
Misdemeanor. The next case, they're hitting me with a filing fine.
And you have felonies coming up. If people are interested in asking questions of Clive, you can give a call in to the station here. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz you're listening to, 101.1 FM. I'm Robert Norris, name of the show, Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. And the phone line is 427-3772, 427-3772. Hopefully you've been able to hear some of this discussion. It's a little hard for me to hear, so hopefully it's not, well, probably is it hard for everybody to hear, but hopefully not impossible. We have about 15 minutes left in the show, but I think what I'm going to do, Clive, is unless we may get a call shortly, and if so, certainly you'll have the chance to answer a few questions, but leave it there. I will say that I did invite you to come into the studio, but you chose not to for a rather interesting reason. What was that reason?
Well, actually, I'm down south trying to earn money to pay for my lawyer. I'm also reluctant to be in Santa Cruz because of I just get arrested all the time there. I don't feel at all safe in Santa Cruz. The behavior of these criminals is just astonishing. I cannot grasp. And of course, this goes all the way up to the Board of Supervisors, who are well aware of what's going on here. It goes throughout the Sheriff's Department, throughout the District Attorney's Office. Bob Lee's behavior in this, I'm going to be calling to have them all dismissed. The behavior of how they've treated my children, how they've treated me, how they've maliciously prosecuted me with completely bogus charges. So, for example, Bob Lee, the district attorney, is now claiming that because I drove 27 miles per hour down my own private road for Michael McDonald, the shooting instructor of the sheriff's, tried to blow my head off in front of my children. He's saying I committed a felony.
This is an earlier case, which we actually talked about.
That's the STEM case to all this whole nonsense. Yeah.
Right, this was the seminal case. It happened, I think, 2003, was it? Something like that?
2003, March 10, 2003. Yeah,
and we actually have you talking about this case, and I believe it's online in the archives for those who want to hear your original discussion of this. You can Google for Clive Bustrade, B-U-S-T-R-A-D-E, and then also for Huff or for just, I think the best thing to do is Google for Clive Bustrade. You'll probably find it. And if you don't, give a call to me, 423-HUFF, if anybody's interested in following this and wants more information, 423-4833. Clive, is there a place where people can get in touch with you to donate money or offer support for you or ask questions of what's been going on so they can, be a further use?
Sure. It certainly do help if they just send an email to Clive, C-L-I-V-E, at Liberty for Life, or Clive, C-L-I-V-E, at coppercards.com. And I'll get those. I do get thousands of emails. We get about a million people a month hitting our website, Liberty for Life. And actually, before we get off the air, there is something that is critical to mention to all your viewers, and that is if you go to the Liberty for Life, go to the front page, and we have an article there regarding the Baxter bird flu. They put bird flu in vaccinations, sent it to 18 countries. There's also information from guys who are carrying trucks, driving trucks for Homeland Security, that this biological weapon looks like it might be deployed throughout the United States of America. It's probably the most serious attempt at biological attack on the world ever. And this, of course, coincides with the chemtrails that have been spraying us with variant to reduce our immunity. So do not in the least take any vaccinations for flu. become aware of what's going on and demand that all people involved in this biological weapon that was inserted in the vaccination, flu vaccination.
So that's a little bit beyond my expertise right now, but it was certainly you can read about that issue on Clive's website, Liberty for Life, and you can also presumably read some more about and hear some more and see some more of what happened around this most recent conviction. When do you go to the sentencing? What's the date of your sentencing?
My next hearing is the 23rd, where they want to set the case for trial, which again I'm not ready for. I don't have my lawyer for this.
And you're charged with what? What are you charged with?
They've got five false felonies. They've charged all base cases, a misdemeanor charge, saying that I disobeyed Irwin Joseph's order to evict me from my home, which was a criminal act by Irwin Joseph, which the sheriff should have arrested Irwin Joseph over. And instead they arrested me, and because I present proof that it was an illegal order, they said that I made
a threat. What are the five felonies?
So the first one is they said that I threatened an unknown public official with an unknown threat. They said that was a felony.
What was the nature of the threat that they claimed as a felony?
I sent an email, and you can actually see it on the Liberty for Life site, to the sheriffs, giving 15 legal points why Irwin Joseph's order to evict me from my home was categorically illegal and a criminal act by Irwin Joseph.
That's a pretty weird thing to call a threat, I must say. What are the other four felonies?
The other four felonies, they're saying that because I drove 27 miles per hour down my own private road before they tried to murder me in front of my children, they claim that is a felony. They're saying that because I'm a felon, the guns which I purchased with permits are all illegal because they're saying I'm a felon because of the failed murder attempt. And they charge him for owning guns and the Second Amendment, I guess.
Okay, so we got the gun charge, the driving 27 miles per hour, reckless driving charge. We got the threatening Joseph with 15 legal points. That sounds like three charges. Any more?
Four charges, four guns.
Sorry?
Four charges. They broke into my home, illegally searched my vehicle and my home. And
possession of weapons.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And then what's the fifth charge?
Four charges related to the weapon.
Four felonies and the one misdemeanor. Okay.
And one felony.
One
felony claiming that, sending them proof that Irwin Joseph's order was it.
And all this is on the libertyforlife .org?
.com.
.com website. Clive, thank you for taking the time to call in at long distance expense. And, I hope that some of this got out. And certainly, if people want to hear more or read more or see more, they can go to your website. Please keep me advised as to what's happening. Your next hearing is April 23rd. At what time and what court?
8:30. I believe it's in courtroom number one, although I'm not sure.
Right. I actually will be going to court number one tomorrow. And. Paying my disrespect to Ariadne Simons.
You're showing your contempt.
Yeah, and no doubt she will find me in contempt. Now, hopefully not. I mean, I'm I'll talk more about that in a moment. But I appreciate your coming on the air, and I'm, sorry you're in the midst of this shit. So.
Yeah, we need to clear these criminals out of government. We need to clear out our government. We need to bring back governance by the people. We need to make them follow the law.
Thank you, Clive. And again, check out Clive at libertyforlife.com. Talk to you again, Clive. Bye-bye. And we have about 9 minutes left in the show. Uncle Dennis should be coming through the door shortly. So if you got any comments, updates, other bits of news or information, or who knows what, please call in 427-3772. That's the call-in number here. I suppose I should kind of give the standard wrap. We have a cop watch coming up on Saturday at 5 o'clock in front of Borders. That's where we set up a table. We encourage you to fill out a questionnaire about how the police are treating you downtown. If you've had any encounters with the police you want to talk about for free radio, we will record what you have to say and pass it on. We also keep an eye on the police. If we find them, if they venture out onto the avenue to harass the citizenry or to guard and protect the public citizenry, we follow them with a camera and see what they're up to. They're sometimes hard to find, rather elusive. Other times they can be rather bold. It's always kind of a crapshoot.
But we'll be there 5 o'clock in front of Borders Bookstore on Pacific Avenue. It's Saturday, day after tomorrow. You can also check out what the Human Rights Organization is doing 2 hours before at 3 o'clock on Saturday. That's at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific, where we're following issues of criminalization of the poor and so forth. There was to be a rally on April 25th, a week from Saturday. That rally has been postponed / canceled. And there is also a demonstration happening on April 21st on Tuesday up in Sacramento for the rights of homeless people to have some kind of safe ground, even as their encampments are being destroyed by the Sacramento authorities. And there's a story on that actually online, which I'm looking for and I may be able to find actually. Here's a sort of a quick update on that. Campers at the Tent City in Sacramento have been given eviction notices, according to this email I've received from SHOC, Sacramento Homelessness Organizing Committee. Police and railroad police are supposed to be out there trying to get people to move on April 15th. That was, of course, yesterday. They may give people tickets, but if arrests occur, that won't happen until today, and I don't know if that's actually happened yet. Many people left the SMUD, that's Sacramento Municipal Utility District, and railroad property and moved further upriver to adjoining land that belongs to private trust. We found out that the trust gave the city permission to evict people from their property. Some people say they want to take a stand. We don't expect people to stay on SMUD and trust property. And I don't want to hang on here for a while. I reclaim the story that I had a moment ago. Here we go. We're encouraging any people that don't mind shelters too much to go to offered shelter, because yesterday there were 48 empty beds. They are empty most likely because everyone is too busy moving their belongings. It's best that the shelters are full when and if civil disobedience occurs. Some people that live in houses, I call them homies, are going out there tomorrow. That is, say, they went out there on Wednesday to witness and make sure no abuse occurs and decide later what else we can do. Just an update from Paula of the Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee. And I've left a message for Paula, so hopefully I'll have more news on Sunday when I come back with a longer edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides and more street interviews that actually cover our own local situation in more detail. A lot of stuff I was going to get into, but it looks like I don't have the time to do that because Uncle Dennis is due very shortly with his show From the Cream to the Dregs, which is a regular feature of Thursday evening Free Radio Santa Cruz. Runs from 8 to 11. You get to hear all kinds of ancient music for all you old-timers like myself, and you also get some updates, which Dennis has painstakingly prepared around environmental issues, on which he is the resident expert. So stay tuned for him. And let's have a little musical break here. Actually, what I'll do is I'm going to play a little more of the Felton Meth is Fun gang that we were actually talking to about an hour and a half ago before Mike Rhodes called in and before Clive Bustrade called in. I speak somewhat facetiously, but also somewhat seriously. People make choices about the use of drugs. It's important to hear their personal experience and their testimony and not simply jump on board stereotypes. So let's hear some more of a 60-year-old woman talking about her meth experiences.
Yeah, they just go away for a moment. Nobody died.
They just came in from the city.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. And they're all friends from years. All these people are friends from years. This lady right here.
Your name?
Knew.
I'm Gail.
Hey, Gail. I'm Robin.
She knew my husband before he died. She was our friend, and is still my best friend. You know, and all these people have so, I promise you, have taken care of me the entire, every day since my husband died.
Gail, is meth good for, what's your name again?
Johnny.
Johnny?
I met Johnny when she was using.
Yeah.
So.
What's your feeling about that? I mean, my
feeling is that it hasn't changed her life. She's done nothing, like she said, to hurt anybody. She hasn't gone out and then done things that I didn't know that she did before.
What about alcohol? How's alcohol treating
Johnny? Alcohol? For who?
For Johnny.
For Johnny? Yeah. She was drinking when I met her also, so. I can't be a judge.
Cirrhosis of the liver, perhaps?
No.
I'm sure.
It got nothing to do with the physical.
Yeah,
it has to do with the mental.
Yeah.
I get a little crazy.
Right, but I'm saying you may be facing health problems, too, as a consequence.
Well, of course.
Yes.
Of course.
So I can't be judgmental, so.
I'm not saying being judgmental, but just in terms
of
what you would support her doing, you know.
Her
I mean,
yeah.
So I'm
okay.
Yeah, I'm not saying that you're not okay. I'm just, I mean, people are listening to this show, and I'll be playing this tomorrow. I'll give you my card.
Okay.
We'll probably be saying, oh, you're talking about these meth freaks and these fucking winos, man.
Well, I'm going to tell you, meth is good for some people, not all people.
Research the library on that.
But for me and my friends, we don't harm anyone. We do meth, and we like it. We play with each other. We have a good time, and it's not bad.
You're on tape. Don't forget.
I know.
It's not bad, and it's a very sexual thing.
You're mine.
It is a sexual thing.
It's a very sexual thing.
It is a sexual thing.
It's a sexual thing. We can play all night long, have a great ass time, hurt no one. Just love each other.
It's walking out in the public, and being the public eye, and have a cop stopping, knowing your background, profiling you, and seeing, oh, gee, your eyes aren't dilating properly. What's wrong? What do you have to do? And, you know, they're trained to put you on the offensive immediately.
Now,
do I want to do meth?
Oh, have I? Oh, definitely. Oh, damn straight I have.
Now, give me an example of the last time that happened.
Last time? I was in somebody's camp in Santa Cruz. This was in November last year.
Right.
I was in somebody's camp. Stayed the night there. I've been in a doctor's care for pain management on methadone until I'm at somebody's camp one morning. I woke up, and I'm telling this guy that was there that I knew who just got parole. He told me this had been the camp that had been raided 2 months prior, 11 people arrested. I'm getting up. I said, oh, my God. I said, I've got to get out of here. I'm getting off formal probation in 2 months. Stay on my methadone.
For meth or?
No, for heroin.
For heroin
addiction.
We can talk about that next time.
Yeah. So anyways, but this, I was on pain medication for, you know. Anyway, so I'm
just
sitting
saying
there.
No to heroin.
I say no to heroin.
Yeah. Johnny does not do heroin. But anyways, I'm talking to this man, and he's giving me the background of the camp I'm sitting in, and it's daylight now. I hitchhiked there because I didn't want to hitchhike up Graham Hill Road at 1:30 in the morning prior night. Prior to the next morning, daylight hits, he tells me the same camp that 11 people have been arrested at. I said, I have got to get the flock out of here. I cannot be here. I put my shoes on. I hear Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department.
Mm-hmm.
Officer Sergeant Yanez pulls in. Gail, how you doing? I was standing, putting my shoes on.
That's not a bad thing.
I was standing, putting my shoes on, picked my backpack up. There was a crank pipe there. It was not mine. I kicked it right in front of him. He says, why'd you do that? I said, it panics. It's a free move. I've been being arrested.
Were you arrested for that?
He gave me a ticket on the pretense of if I gave up dope dealers on the podium. I said, I can't do that. I'm not using anymore.
So they wanted to use you as a snitch.
A snitch, yes. As a snitch.
They asked me a snitch, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they did.
I couldn't use anybody because I'm not using anymore. I'm not using.
So they gave you a ticket instead.
He gave me a ticket. I went to court. I fought it. I was fighting a ticket.
Did you win?
I went and gave in immediately because at the end of the deal, my DA, or the DA came to me and with a deal that, shut up, with plead guilty to, no probation, by the way, no probation.
But you did plead to something.
Hey, I said, yeah, okay, I'll plead guilty, $120 fine, no probation, nothing. You know, I told the public defender, it was the snitch ticket. The guy wanted me to snitch. He flat out told me this can disappear if you give up names on the Poconip. Go down, get the dope because I said, I'm not using it anymore. I was not using the time. Since then, my prescription got pulled at Metacruz. Got pulled.
Prescription for?
Methadone. He got pulled. My doctor thought I lied to her. I have no methadone anymore. I'm using heroin again.
And that's going to be it. Robert, you're out of here.
We'll resume this discussion of heavy drugs on Sunday. You may bring your own drugs, of course. And, you know, as I said, it's a serious discussion, and it's an honest discussion with three older women who apparently seem able to handle themselves in public. But you can be the judge, at least based upon what's being said. Thanks, Dennis, for letting me go at least 2 minutes overtime.
At least, Robert.
Thank you.
I mean, how many hours did you have extra today?
Extra. I was filling up the void that was left by questionable individuals who weren't here to program properly the station.
Anyway, if you're not tired of Robert Norse by this point, and you want to hear more of this genre of public expose and the stoned and hopped up ramblings of various street denizens, drunks, and other malcontents, then Robert Norris is the man for you. 9:30 Sunday morning right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz for more Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. And if Robert's batteries don't die, then life will go on. I'm Uncle Dennis. For the next 3 hours, we're going to be listening to music from the 60s and 70s. It's part of a show called From the Cream to the Dregs. Stay tuned for all of that. Of course, the Earth First Update, environmental news for you at 9 o'clock, and then the Spotlight Group of the Week, a whole hour of one group or soloist. All right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Support us if you can. Here's some Who. Who, you say?
Let's see. The noise.